Josie, thank you so much for joining me today. Super excited to chat with you. And for those that don't know, me and Josie are married. So normally I say, tell me about your background. I know all about your background. I'm going to give you a quick synopsis here. It is hardcore AF childhood, finance, coding boot camp, crypto artist, now founder of a, I guess, media entertainment company.
Yeah,
Do you want
thanks
to
for that.
elaborate on any of that?
I feel like I've talked about my background on a lot of podcasts, so I don't know if we need to elaborate deeply in the background, unless there's something you think is interesting enough, to go into.
I think we can probably just jump into it. I think we can save the deep dive in your background for a different pod, but
All right,
I kind
perfect.
of want to jump right in.
Let's do
So,
it.
okay, you went from an artist who was making physical pieces of art that had crypto as the theme to then diving into NFTs pretty early. Actually, no, sorry, before that, you were turning your artworks, your physical pieces into augmented reality pieces. So that was kind of a really cool game-changing moment. And then going from there to NFTs. So how is that process and, kind of journey, I guess? And then how is it now running a company? Because it's like a huge range of skills and kind of, things going on.
Yeah, I mean the process is kind of crazy because if I look back on it, I guess 5.5 years seems short, but also 5.5 years seems like forever when I actually think of what's happened over those past years. It was definitely in the beginning. It's interesting there. It was always a grind. It was just a different grind. In the beginning, it was creating crypto art that had the theme, a lot of Bitcoin work, and then later Ethereum work, and really just creating to create about the ethos and and all these like the journey that we were all on together, while collecting cryptocurrencies and investing into these. And then once I got to NFTs, like I couldn't even give away my first NFTs for free. Right, like the people who are collecting my work were Bitcoiners. They didn't want to touch anything on Ethereum. So the beginning grind with creating the art was really special because crypto did make me an artist. I wasn't doing art obviously professionally before becoming a crypto artist, and I hadn't really done it even as a hobby in years before. And then once I started doing NFTs, like I said, the first ones I gave away for free. And then eventually could sell them for $50, $80, and that just kept racking its way up. So it was always a grind. It was just a different grind. And now it's totally different with running cyber brokers and having an entire team, and having a much wider collector base, and fan base, that really feels a part of the collection. So it's been a roller coaster for sure.
Yeah, and you recently put out a tweet thread that was basically talking about your journey going, what you've learned from running a company. And could you kind of dive into some of those insights and, learnings that you've experienced while running
Yeah.
Cyberbrokers?
Yeah. And actually, before I get into that, I just thought of something. I remember you asked me years ago, like years before, even before I started thinking about cyber brokers, like what I really wanted to do. And this was when I was making crypto art. And you're like, where do you see yourself in 5 years from now? Like, what do you actually want to do? Do you want to be creating art every day? Do you want to have a business? Like, what is it? And I said, well, I want to have a brand. I want to have a business. And yes, I want to create art, but I want to create something that is much bigger than just me by myself. And I haven't thought about that in a while, but now talking and remembering that, I kind of feel special where I am now at Cyber Brokers. But over this past year, when I launched, we launched in March of 2022. So it hasn't even been a full year, 10 months. And I've learned a tremendous amount. We started, I mean, we're still really bootstrappy. I heard about a project today that had 100 people on their team and had like not a massive market cap. Like I was super or all-time sales. I was super surprised we have a really small team compared to some of the others out there, but we are like bootstrapping and grinding and everyone is working their butt off every day. Some of the things that I've learned over the past year that I'm still learning because some of them are really difficult are to listen more than you talk. Obviously, I'm not doing that on this podcast, but really hear what your team is saying, hear what collectors are saying. When you get on a call with someone, let them talk, make those thoughtful pauses and let them run with whatever else is on their mind. Don't always jump in and try to make the comparison to their life. Like really let them share what they want to share. And then you can form deeper connections with that. That's something I'm definitely still working on that I've learned. The 85% rule, which is hard for me, but probably one of my favorite things that I learned recently, was I like the small details of the art. I'm like, no, we need to fix this. This needs to go here. This needs to go here. And those details that I do with the art, I started doing with everything, every single aspect of our company. And so I was bogged down every single day doing reviews and feedback and combing every single little thing. When I learned this rule that it's the 85% rule. If someone on your team can do it 85% as good as you can do it, let them lead it and only do what only you can do. So that was the second part of the advice of really like you are the lead of the company. You are the CEO. You need to be going out there doing biz dev, whatever it may be, but only do what only you can do. So those are definitely the two biggest things I feel like I've, or three biggest things that I feel like I've learned this year that I'm still putting into practice.
Yeah. Cause you went from a individual creative, you know, working by yourself on your own schedule, kind of doing what you want, to now managing a team. And I've also experienced that transition and it's a hard one. And so it's just something that I want to touch upon. Cause I think it's like it's a very interesting concept to go from like, oh, I'm good at creating art to, oh, now I'm like running a company. Okay, that's a pretty good transition.
But it's always what I've wanted to do. So I feel like it's a challenge that I'm really excited about. I mean, you obviously know more intimately than anyone. I'm still pulling all-nighters. I'm still doing a lot of the same stuff I did as an artist to like really feel like I've got enough accomplished in a day. I need an extra day of the week. So I just do that by sleeping less, which probably isn't great, but it's a totally different schedule, but it's really been rewarding so far.
So how would you describe like your skill set, you know, or like, how would you describe yourself and your skill set? Cause you're on one hand, a creative, on the other hand, you have to like, you know, be a manager or kind of a founder. Not that those things are at odds, but you know, you kind of view like a CEO one way and like an artist a different way. So how would you describe that?
Yeah, I think it's about having the vision and sharing it properly with your team. So like from everything, from the tech side of it, from the art side of it, from the story side of it, there are some things I'm stronger at and some things I'm weaker at for sure. So I've been able to surround myself with really, really talented people in those categories. But really being able to provide the vision and not only encourage and lead my team in that vision, but also I've been learning to really provide that vision to the community that's a part of this. So that has been the biggest difference is with my art, the vision is a solo thing. I have the vision, I create the piece, I put it out, I put a meaning with it, and someone can decide to connect with it if they want and they're interested. With this, I have to sell the team on the vision and tell them where we're headed. And we have to build that out for the entire ecosystem and sell them on the vision.
Okay, so we've been talking about your company a lot. Like, tell me, what is CyberBrokers and why is it exciting?
Yeah, so CyberBrokers is a multimedia and entertainment company. Super high level, we have like our three main pillars. So we have our content. So that would high level encompass all of the world building stories, these chapters that we've been putting out, which have been really collaborative with the community, which has been really amazing. Eventually in the future, hopefully animated series, comics, all of those sorts of things in the content category. We have collectibles, which so far has been our 10,001 CyberBroker collection. And then we also, our community members have been collecting all of these mech parts all year. And we actually have reveal and assembly for mechs right around the corner, which I'm super, super excited about. And yeah, that's a whole crazy thing we could talk about. But our collectibles will continue to expand as our universe expands in really thoughtful ways. And then we have gaming. So it's more of like, I'd say, actually, I'd probably start to brand it experiences, because that category would encompass both virtual experiences and physical experiences. We're going to be doing a lot more with physical, hopefully this coming year and next, with like IRL exhibitions or AR hunts or whatever it may be. We have some fun ideas planned there, but then also the digital experiences. So gaming, we've been teasing this a bit, but we have resources coming out, crafting coming out. So people are going to be able to make really cool items with resources that they gather along the way in our gamified thing that we're building. So that's like high level media and entertainment company. And our three main categories are content, collectibles, and gaming.
And how did you land upon like media and entertainment company? Just because I feel like, I mean, I also categorize like PFPs in that category, but I feel like not many people do. So what was the thought process behind it? Cause I feel like a lot of people would say, oh, like we're a PFP, like we're a PFP project or yeah.
So actually, well, when we first started creating Cyber Brokers, PFP projects like didn't exist or hadn't been branded yet, because only Cyber Broker or CryptoPunks was out. The first like PFP wave, I guess, started with hash masks, I would say.
That was huge.
Yeah. But we had started working on it before hash masks. Unfortunately, it took a really long time to launch Cyber Brokers for a few different reasons. One of the biggest is that I basically had to take a 6-month break because I got pregnant and super, super sick, which I'm blaming all on you. But that was, it was a long journey leading up. But anyways, the reason why I would categorize it as that is, or working backwards a little, when somebody first said IP to me, I was really confused. Like, I didn't exactly know what IP meant. And then I started doing a lot of research and trying to understand like, what does IP really mean? And that's probably something silly to say, but I was like thinking and reading, I'm like, oh yeah, I want to build an IP. And I'm like, well, what does that really mean to build an IP? And then I started reading about, you know, these stories and experiences where brands and like transcend what you're watching on the TV and a movie and really become a part of your identity. Kids want them on their lunchbox. They want them in their house, on their sheets. Like, it really becomes a part of their identity. They look up to these heroes or whatever it may be. So that got me really excited when I was learning about just what IP was and building that. And so when I was learning with that and knowing what I wanted to build with Cyber Brokers, I want Cyber Brokers to be a global brand that everyone knows, whether you're coming at it from the fashion side of things, both digital and physical, the gaming side of things, the, you know, content side of things with animated series. I really want it to create a brand that is global and can touch all of these different aspects with the IP that we've built. So that's why I would call it a media and entertainment company.
So like, if you look at like, you know, Pokemon, that was a game. Look at Game of Thrones, that was a, you know, series of TV shows, Star Wars movies. What is like the core, I guess, of Cyber Brokers in terms of like that concept?
Yeah, it's similar in those ways that the core is the story. The core is the universe we're building, TPL for us. So the paradigm is our world, and that is the core. All of our, it's almost like that is the roots and the trunk and the base of our tree, and everything that we're building with the additional content and collectibles and everything are hanging on that tree. So that is definitely the core.
Okay. So tell me about I know that you spent, I was there and I saw you were spending a lot of time on your website, and obviously seeing it now live, it's like insane. Why bother? Why, who cares?
Yeah.
Look at like Yuga, and actually Artifact is kind of a cool one. It is confusing, but it's cool. Why even spend this much time and effort into a website when most people don't like care.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised people don't care as much as they do. And companies in the space that have made like insane amounts of money haven't reinvested back in that way. We are a digitally native brand, and that means that you need to have an epic digital presence. And if you don't, I kind of think that's a lame, I kind of think it's lame. And I don't think the bigger projects who have the funding and the bandwidth have an excuse to not have an amazing digital presence for their users.
Can you describe, because right now you have Cyberworkers, you're coming off Mex. What's the difference and what do Mex do?
Yeah. So Mex are our gateway to basically like what I've been talking about, gaming, right? Mex are a gateway to that. So I'm excited that there's a couple layers to it. We have Mex, which will be, you have to pilot in our universe. So right now you can pilot with Cyberbrokers. You'll eventually be able to pilot with Drifters. All of the choices that you make.
Sorry, Drifters?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So Cyberbrokers are 10,001 collection. They're almost like these. The really brief backstory is that Cyberbrokers were the first to come to the paradigm. They were volunteers when basically the Earth had a crazy ice age and killed off a huge population. And before all of the Earth went to shit, the government decided we need to make a metaverse. We need volunteers to load into this metaverse to, you know, make it livable for the rest of the human race that's left. And so these were the 10,001 volunteers. Basically, we found out in chapter four, we're way past chapter four. So if I'm spoiling it for you, skip this 1 second, but we're way past this at this point, that all of the cyber brokers were AI. So they weren't actually humans on Earth. And the humans that are on Earth still, the smaller portion that's left of them, are living in bunkers. It's an ice age. They're living in bunkers. They're, you know, trying to source energy all day. And their life sucks outside of the metaverse. They plug into TPL every single day to play and live and do what they would like to do. Those are the Drifters. So those are the people who are still left on Earth. We are going to be introducing Drifters, which is going to be really fun. I don't know how much I want to share about that yet, but Drifters are going to be what we are going to launch after Mex. And super customizable, ton of digital fashion coming everyone's way. But anyways, right now we have Cyberbrokers and we have Drifters, which are basically like the avatars of this world. And we have mechs, which are huge, giant robots that people can battle, travel, do whatever they want within the world, transport. And so you need someone to pilot your mech. You need someone to control it and drive it, sort of Ready Player One style. So within our game, you're going to have options of what mechs you're sending on what missions, who you're choosing to pilot your mech, all of the choices that you'll make within this game we've built. And by the way, like when I say game, like very, very MVP, like we are starting at the baseline. We're not going to be someone who can't ship for years because it's not like AAA and super perfect. We're starting very baseline, extremely simple. But we have these mechanics where you'll choose who is going to go on these different missions. And depending on your choices, will give you a different outcome for the resources that you earn. And resources that you earn within our world, you can craft. So you can make, you can go to the crafting table, look at your blueprints, figure out what you could make with your resources and actually make NFTs, with those assets. People could take the route of like buying resources and creating, or they could take the route of, participating and earning resources to create.
Okay. So with Mex, you can acquire resources and then you craft stuff. And are you gonna be able to, you mentioned like battling and stuff, like what are you gonna be able to do with your mechs?
Yeah, so there's a couple layers. There's the layer of being able to go on missions, which like I said, is a very MVP, like imagine extremely simple text-based idle game. And then we have the other aspect of mechs, which is that we've built mechs fully in 3D, completely rigged, which we're super excited about, because it gives them this versatility that they could be used in all these other worlds and games. They could be used in basically any world that will accept the most standard rig that we've decided to build on. There's a lot of nuances within that that I'm happy to go into, but I don't know how technical we want to get with 3D assets. But I'm excited about it because not only could people go in virtual worlds with these 3D avatars that are already ready to go, which you cannot do with, I mean, someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think with almost any NFT or at least any of the top ones that are on the market. But you can imagine with a fully rigged asset, the other things that you could do. I could be a mech on this podcast in this, you know, on this video right now. It'd be fully rigged and I could have it track my movements. I could have it as AR filters on Instagram or Snapchat. Like really the possibilities are going to be endless with having those assets.
Okay. So do you have concerns? Okay. So I guess like this is a deeper question about like floor price, but do you have concerns about people associating, because also you said you just want to ship and like, you're like, just want to ship. It's going to be text-based at first, this game or game-like experience, and over time will iterate and improve. Do you have concerns that, I guess, number one, do you look at floor price and how does it affect you? Because I feel like I would figure you must. And then number two, with the mechs, if these are part of a game or experience or something, I feel like people, if you look at what's performed the best, it's like art and collectibles that have no utility in terms of a price action here. And it's because like, they're not promising anything. They're like, hey, yeah, it's like, this is how it is. And that's what you get versus this. Yep. It's like, maybe the game is not as fun initially maybe. And people are like, oh,
okay,
like,
I think it'll be fun. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be very fun. It's going to be very fun.
Yeah, no, it's a good question because, you know, we even got that question when we first launched Cyber Brokers and we were writing these stories and having the writer's room interact and help us build these stories and having these quests for people to go down and change things. And people said, you know, everything that a majority of your community is going to be looking at is floor price. And if you, you could be doing the best thing out there, but if the floor price isn't changing, people will have plenty of feedback to give you on how you could change that. If your floor price is increasing and you're doing nothing, they're like, yeah, we were sleepers. Like we were always going to increase. Like there's always something, right? I'm not going to stop being a builder and worry that the floor price of Cyber Brokers would go down or mechs would go down if not everyone is in love with our first version of our game. Like, I'm not going to let that hold me back for all of the future things we have to build. It's kind of it's one of the pieces of feedback that I just don't think is a builder's mentality or really a person who's thinking about something that can grow much bigger than we are right now. Like, sure, right now, the biggest PFP projects or projects in general that are on the charts, there's some luck to the timing and when they launched or how they got their big breaks. Some of them had really amazing marketing that also has helped them, you know, get to where they are. Whatever it may be, there's a story with everything. And we're not going to stop building and just hope that our price creeps up by just being an art project.
Okay, so your mentality is just like, it's basically just, hey, I'm going to ship and keep shipping, irregardless of pricing and irregardless of the people, maybe some negative sentiment.
Yeah, because imagine like as we become bigger and we get our collector base larger and larger with the things that we're doing. First of all, we are extremely genuine in what we put out. And every single decision I make at the company, I think about how it's going to affect our community. I'm really, really careful and cautious and, you know, reputation is everything. That's how I got here. So it's really, really important to me to do right by the community and make every decision extremely thoughtful. And hopefully I would have made that decision even like 5 years from now, looking back on it. So that's how I try to make every decision. I'm not going to stop and just hope, like stop building and hope that floor price will rise if we just say that we're an art collectible.
Okay. So wait, building off that, like, so, you know, is your mentality like, because you said like, everything I do, I want to do right by the community. And are you thinking, hey, we're like, I want to build the coolest, dopest shit out there. And like, then, you know, we will be recognized at some point. Or are you thinking like, okay, is this best for the user if I do this? Or like, what is your,
I think about it best for the, like the longevity and the growth of the brand. And I think that that directly impacts the community. So like, for example, this is a weird example that just came to my head and is so niche. I don't even know who will know this, but remember when we first got in CryptoVoxels and it was all black and white, and Ben and the really early users of CryptoVoxels did not want to add color. They said, no, it ruins what this world is. This is like supposed to be super simple, blah, blah, blah. And then once they added color, like it blew up and became an art gallery thing and like all of this. Like, I am trying to think about all my decisions, not necessarily from my personal preference of what I would want something to be, or even a single community member's personal preference. I'm trying to think about it in, like I said, what will be good a year, 2 years, 5 years from now. That's how I'm trying to make every decision. I'm sure I'll mess up. I already have messed up with a few decisions, but I'm doing making the best effort in every decision I can to make sure that it means that our community is growing in a positive way.
And so how do you see Cyberbrokers evolving? Because you have Cyberbrokers, of course, and you have Mechs, Drifters. Like, what, how is this world going to evolve? And what are like the categories I should be thinking about?
Yeah. So what I'm really excited about with the way that we're changing the way some of the narrative is happening is I want people to get like deep in, the people who want to be a part of the content, of course, like not everyone's going to want to be a part of that, to get deep into their little corners, right? Like, you know, how Game of Thrones has the different houses, or, you know, that there's that example for every big series, Lord of the Rings, whatever it is. So like, I want there to be tribalism. I want there to be competition. I want there to be factions of people who are battling for different resources, or trying to unlock a blueprint faster so they could get some special edition of it. Like, I really want people to like feel really connected with the part of the story that they want to fit in. And I want them to like go die hard for it. And there's going to be aspects and different things that we drop that are going to continue to grow those different groups into even smaller and more groups. And then there's also going to be things that we do that like bring larger groups together. I don't know if that necessarily made sense, but like having this sense of community while at the same time being really proud of the smaller like house that you're a part of. So I really want to grow in that way where our narrative and our lore gets a lot deeper. Every single person can find a corner that they connect with. And then we translate those, like that tribalism and that those people connecting to our collectibles and to our gaming, and write them in the story with different things that are happening, you know, live from actions they make. That's how I really want to see this go. And you can imagine that you could expand that massively to merch, animated series, all of those sorts of things.
So, okay. So I keep hearing a lot of like Game of Thrones references. When you're looking at different IP, whether it be games, whether it be movies, whether it be, I don't know, like, yeah, games, movies, books, whatever, what do you look at for inspiration for Cyberbrokers?
Two biggest inspirations that I've had for a while are Love, Death, Robots. I love Love, Death, Robots. I'm a huge fan, all the seasons. I really loved season one the best. Season three had really good ones too. Anyways, love Death, Robots. I love Mischief. I love Marvel. I love, you know, it's funny because I didn't grow up with like a lot of TV or movies. So I've like in my adult life gotten to absorb all these things. I had never seen Harry Potter until I was, what, like 2 years ago, right? I had never seen Lord of the Rings, never seen any of these. So like I find a little bit of inspiration in all of the things that I'm watching. Because I think even if it's some shows are bad, they have like good nuggets of everything. But overall, I look back to the ones that are tried and true, like a Marvel or something like that. And then the ones that really inspire me either artistically or like marketing geniuses, like a Mischief or like a Love, Death, Robots.
Yeah. So really quick, as a note, when we first started dating, I was like, wait, you haven't seen this movie? Oh, wait, you haven't seen this show? You haven't seen this movie? And I was like, hell yeah. And we got to watch everything again, which was amazing. So quick note there. All right. So marketing. That's something that, I work with our portfolio companies with a lot, just because I do believe that marketing is hugely impactful when these NFTs and these things, a lot of them are driven by the story. And so when I say story, I mean like the narrative around them.
Yep.
So how do you view marketing?
My view on marketing has changed a lot. I mean, so my problem was that coming from a solo artist, I hated marketing. Like I never had social media until 2017 when I became a crypto artist. That's when I got social media because I had to. My art blew up on Reddit. I didn't even have a Reddit. I had to ask you to post it on Reddit for me. So you know how much I hate social media. And social media is marketing. It's marketing yourself. So I've always hated it. I've gotten more used to it and a little bit better at it. But to be honest with my art before Cyber Brokers, I was like, well, if someone doesn't like it, fuck off. Like, don't pay attention to it. It doesn't like bother me. So it was definitely a different situation on how I would market my art because it was more of like, to be honest, a lot of relationship building and getting to know my collectors. And it was a more intimate vibe. With Cyber Brokers, even though I have actually gotten to know a good amount of our community intimately in a really, really special way. But with Cyber Brokers, it's different. I think in the beginning, I wanted to take the route we're building, like we don't need to talk about it. We'll prove it. We got awards for the most innovative smart contract. We've stored the most art on chain. I'm pretty sure like ever, like directly stored on chain and the most robust. We've got like all of these things. We've made these technical, like jumped over these technical hurdles, over these artistic hurdles, over all these hurdles. But what I've realized over the past year is if you don't shout it from the rooftops and make sure that not only like everyone hears, but like the people who need to hear, then it doesn't matter because you do have to play the game a bit. So I'm still getting used to that. I mean, it's funny because right now we've really started doubling down in our marketing and putting out a lot of things these past month. And our community members are really excited about it and proud and are like, yes, finally, like really good marketing. So we're getting in a better direction, but it was something that was challenging for me.
So yeah, how do you market to this community? Is it just like Twitter or is it TikTok or is it, you know, like, and like what is your messaging?
Yeah. So obviously it's mostly Twitter and Discord right now, spaces and things like that, but it needs to get bigger than that. It needs to be the TikToks and the Instagrams because we want, especially with drifters and things that we're going to be introducing with digital fashion, or even the resources within our gaming, like we want people who are not necessarily Web3 native to join as well, because that's how the whole entire ecosystem of NFTs can grow. So that means you have to market outside of, you know, just Twitter and Discord when you can. So we've been working on TikTok strategies and Instagram strategies and things like that. And the marketing, the voice, there's a couple of different voices. It depends what platform you're on, as you probably know. It's been a process and a little bit of testing to figure out all of those things.
Okay. So what do you think about because you're talking about voices, what do you think about the astronomically high levels of hero worship in crypto? I feel like every crypto project has some founder that everyone views like a god. And I find it interesting. And it makes sense because a lot of these blockchains, a lot of the projects, whatever, there is no substance behind it. A lot of it is purely based off of like the hype, which, you know, is fine. Like people, you know, some people could say like Game of Thrones is terrible and it's all hype and the story's not worth it. Other people love it, right? So it's like on the NFT side, I get the blockchain side is a little more sketchy because like they're saying, oh, we're going to build the best, fastest blockchain in the world. And it's just like crap. So how do you view hero worship? And is that something that you're like, oh, I'm going to like do this?
Yeah, I think hero worship is dangerous and sticky. If you don't know, if your hero is anonymous, I think a lot of people, it's funny, we have like all of these insane things that happen with these like heroes in the space. Not everyone's bad. There's actually a lot of amazing ones that I know personally, which are all stars. But we do have this bucket of people who, because you're online and there's like it's okay to be anonymous in our space and all of that. There's a lot of people who have taken advantage of that. And we've just totally like forgotten about it. Like, I feel like no one remembers, I'm not going to name them all, but like no one remembers these massive influencers that were huge and then pulled one over on everyone. And then they scurry away for a few months and they probably come back as a different brand new hero for someone to worship. And nobody knew that it was the anonymous person that just scammed everyone a couple months ago. So like, and people, because the space moves so fast, people forget that a lot unless they were like specifically burned intensely. So I think it's dangerous. I don't necessarily always think it's bad. For example, like, do I kind of worship Robin? Yeah, he's really cool. Like everyone should kind of worship him. Robin, like
Robin.
I am Supermassive. Okay. Yeah, like he's fucking awesome. Like, yeah, I'll worship him a bit. So like there's, or like collectors that I've known for so long that are huge people in the space. Like, yeah, sure. But I've also like, I know them personally. I feel like I've done some DD. So it's slippery. What do you think about it? I'm curious.
I don't know. I on one hand, as mentioned before, it makes sense because there's not a lot to chew on. A lot of these projects, a lot of them are just based off of narrative hype and bullshit. So from that standpoint, it's logical why people would latch on to these people with really strong personalities. And, you know, they're like, hey, we're going to change the world. We're going to do something crazy. And that being said, like there is a lot of that too. Like there is some truth to this is going to change the world. This is going to transform so many industries.
How many people do you think are honest that are saying that though?
Oh my God. I mean, it's almost like saying like what tokens in the crypto ecosystem are actually make sense in their ecosystem, you know, in their protocol, like less than half, right?
Yeah.
A lot of them are just like tacked on for no reason. So yeah, I'd say that like, I get it. It's understandable. Is it good or bad? I don't know. I'm not one to say. I'm really big into people are always blaming other people about the mistakes that they make. Like if I listen to my favorite influencer and they're like, go buy this coin, go buy this NFT, whatever. And it like, and I buy it and I lose all my money. Like that's my fault. That is completely my fault. And people get so mad about other people doing that. But
I do think that there is some, like, I agree with you that you should be making your own decisions. But I do think that a lot of the people, at least that you're specifically talking about, are predators and they prey on these people.
100%.
And it's disgusting. And I don't blame the people that are falling for it. Like, yes, we need to be, you know, educate a lot more. And yes, it's their decision at the end of the day, but they're being preyed upon.
Okay.
In some scenarios.
No, I agree totally. But also like, you gotta get good. You have to like get smart, right? Like I had one of my friend's dads call me. This is back in the BitConnect days. He goes, BitConnect, it's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. I go, and I told him, I said, Bob, fake name, Bob, it is a literal Ponzi scheme. The SEC has come out and said that it is a Ponzi scheme and that they're going to be shutting it down. He goes, I know, I understand that, but I do think it can go up a lot until their court date, which is this day or whatever. And I was like, oh my God, that taught me, I was like, people cannot be saved. People cannot be saved.
But what I will say, even about that specific situation, that person and many people who are thinking like that can afford to have a really big loss like that if it goes the other way. That's why they take that bet. There's some people who can't afford to have a loss like that. And once their person that they've been following for 2 years on every podcast, every spaces, have been, you know, pouring their time and effort into researching everything they say, and they make one call on them and that person walks away. Like, those are the people that
you know what I mean?
Okay. Like, and that's a good chunk of people, by the way. People spend more than they can lose in most cases.
Yeah. Everyone's like, don't spend more than you can lose. And everyone does.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think, okay, so that's fair. I do think that what I'm saying is people just need to take some ownership of their own
actions. Yeah.
Because I feel like people always put the onus on, Logan Paul, or I don't know, whatever person scammed me or whatever. Because right? I just said Logan Paul because I know that those videos have been going
out. Yeah, Copyzilla did a really good job with that.
But then there's people like Sam Bankman-Fried, who, you know, that guy is a straight up scammer, right? Who fooled so many people. And that was like with legal writing and documentation and investment. And, you know, that's,
yeah.
I view that as, and maybe I'm wrong to view it as different, but when there's like a, you know,
I mean, that's investment. Different because people thought they were literally using a secure, safe service, right? That wasn't, they weren't making a bet. They were using it as their bank.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was a company with people that are known and incorporated and legal documentation, et cetera, versus like, oh, hey, there's some Anon people that are launching like this dick butt, you know, PFP, like I'm going to ape, right? Like, you know, if you get scammed on that, then it's like, hey, you know, I got scammed, like whatever, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so I agree with you. It's more fuzzy than I'm making it out to be. But yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's slippery. That's the answer.
So speaking of this, what are your thoughts on cults?
We're in one, so I guess I kind of like them.
Yeah. All right. So tell me more.
About our cult or just cults in general? I'm fascinated by cults, honestly. I think, or just religion in general. Like, I know it's not like synonymous, but sometimes it kind of feels like it is. So I think it's fascinating. I think for me, like, crypto sort of is my religion in some way, because I'm not interested in religion itself. I'm not really interested in politics, and crypto has become my religion. So yeah, it's a little culty. I would, especially when like you get in a group where like four of you are in the space, and then there's like two, like the one or two people that are not, and they are just like wanting to die because all you're talking about is like NFTs and like what just happened and all that. It feels culty for sure.
So when you see some low quality, low effort project, some NFT project launch, and then, you know, go crazy, and everyone's talking about the floor price is 20 Ether or whatever. Does that just piss you off like crazy, or is it, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I'm lucky I don't easily get triggered, because if I did, it probably would. Honestly, I think about it as a reflection of like where we are in the space right now and how my team and me can do better. I do think that people are pump a lot of things, obviously, to just make that quick investment, that quick buck, that quick return. And I'm not striving to like have that happen with our project necessarily, even though I know some people would be really happy. But I try to look at, first of all, I only look at floor price once a week when I'm reviewing KPIs. So, I don't look at it daily. Maybe I should, but I would probably just spend too much time looking at all the charts. I just think about it as how can we do better, or where is like, how mature is the space right now, basically.
Very, very diplomatic of you. All right. So I know CyberBrokers has been self-funded so far. What is your stance on taking third-party funding?
Wait, before I answer that, why do you think that was diplomatic? What were you hoping my response would be? Those projects. Like,
yeah. I was hoping
they're trash.
That's exactly what I was hoping you'd
say. Yeah, I guess I just don't. I guess my problem, maybe this is less diplomatic or even more, like, I just don't care. If something that is out there that is low effort, it's probably the same people flipping it to try to get more out of it. And like, I don't have the time to care about another project that's being a piece of shit. Like, you know what I mean?
So it's like you're looking at, you're basically looking at your company, just, hey, I'm going to build the best thing. I don't care that it's not a financial game for you. It's versus other people in the NFT space. It is a trading game. It's a financial game for them. So
I mean, we have to be careful where we need to make sure we're making the revenue, that we have like all of these things to have longevity. But at the end of the day, I'm extremely confident in what we're building. And like, we are actually building something that is going to be interesting and different. And it's like super innovative. And if someone, like, we could just oversaturate our market with NFTs and sell out of a ton of stuff, but we're not doing that. And there's a reason why.
Okay. So talking about revenue, third-party funding, I know you guys have not raised venture capital. Why is that? And do you have plans to do that?
It's an interesting question, especially because of who you are and what you do in the space. I do not want to raise venture capital right now. And I've always told you, if I was going to bring someone in, like for me, it would need to be extremely strategic and like a marriage where I'm getting something really valuable out of them. And it's not just dumb money. Like, I would want a partnership that is super deep in one of our areas, if possible, with where I'm at now. Of course, in the future, like as we're growing, I don't want to say, oh, I'll never take funding. We could totally take funding. It would just have to be the right thing, the right time. But right now, we are totally self-funded and staying that way for the near term.
For you, is it more of like a control thing? Like, you don't want any third parties? Yeah. Like, okay.
It's a massive control thing, because as soon as you take money from anyone, you report to them. You have to answer why you are, you know, we can go into that rabbit hole if you want, but you have to answer for everything. I have a vision and where we're headed, and we have the runway and the bandwidth to do it at this time. So right now it makes sense not to take investment.
Fair. All right. So how do you see AI, you know, in the past 6 months or, you know, 6-7 months, we'll call it, AI has just really come out of the woodwork with all this incredible technology that allows content creation on a scale that, I mean, it's made it like 10x cheaper than, you know, ever, whether it be like text, whether it be visual images. Now with video, there's like Runway ML and some other cool companies that are working on that. How does that impact your business? Because you guys are creating stories, you guys are creating content, you guys are creating lore, and I guess games is a little bit separate, but games has some component because you're creating assets and content. But how does AI, how do you view AI and cyberworkers, you know, broadly?
Yeah, I'm really excited about AI. A few people have told me actually they're really surprised about how interested I am in AI or accepting I am of it, because I do have an artist background, and I know there's a lot of concerns in the artist community with AI, which I think makes sense. It totally makes sense. It's something new and really like moving extremely fast. I'm excited about AI. I want it to be a force multiplier for everything we're doing. We're already figuring out how to use AI in some of our art pipeline. We're already playing around and testing with ChatGPT on, you know, what kind of content it could produce for us. And, you know, my dream would be for AI to get to the point where we can, you know, make animated series in AI. Like, it's going to eventually get that good. Probably not that far away. And we've been focusing some time, which I'm really, really excited about, actually with a couple members from our community who are AI engineers, on training AI specifically on our data set, specifically on our cyber brokers, so that we could get our exact characters, our exact attributes into AI that you could never do just purely prompting if you didn't have a trained model. So I'm learning a lot about how to train AI and how to leverage it right now, mostly for text to image, but that like can be eventually image to video or text to video, you know, music. It could be a lot of things. So we are absolutely using AI in any way we can, and want to keep it using it as a force multiplier.
Cool. So you see it in a very positive light, less of a threat, more of a huge advantage.
Yeah. I mean, it is a huge advantage. Think like if I, like all those marketing assets people have been seeing for the last month, like we're staying up all night doing all of those by hand to make them perfect. Like if we had, if AI was where it could, like we'll probably be in 6 months from now, like we are going to be able to produce a lot more content. And because we're training our AIs now, like we have a leg up there where we can still keep a lean team, but produce as much as, like, mind you, like our team is 10 people total, right? And it just recently got to 10 people. Like the all the people on the top list, like they have a lot of people on their team, like 75 plus in a lot of cases. So I'm excited to be able to leverage it and stay lean where we can and still produce really like top of the line quality assets.
Awesome. All right, time for the closing questions.
Okay.
First question, it's written here. So stay silent and give Andrew $500, or make a sound and give Andrew $500.
Who wrote this question for you?
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it, Josie. You owe me $500. Thank you. Okay, next question. What are you bearish on?
What am I bearish on? I mean, I'm bearish on scammers. There was a really terrible hack yesterday, but that's not a good answer. Let me think of something better. I am bearish on, I guess this is a, this isn't a good answer either, because I was going to talk about royalties and I'm bearish on people just totally cutting out royalties, but I also get the game. What are you bearish on? Give me some inspo here.
I mean, you can't just throw it back at me. I wasn't even thinking about it.
Come on, thinking about it. I wasn't thinking about it either. You didn't prep
what
me
am
with
I
any questions.
Bearish on? I guess I'm bearish on, okay, crypto tokens that make no sense.
Well,
like you can't launch a crypto
anything
token
that makes no sense should be, you should be bearish on.
I mean, that wasn't the, you know, that wasn't the kind of the mentality of the past couple of years, right?
Copycat like, projects. How about that?
Wait, explain that. What do you mean?
Just like something that is just totally a copy paste of something else. Unless like, it's like intended for some weird reason, but
so the one that pops to mind is the Saudis. They're like CryptoPunks, but they're like they look like Saudi characters.
No, I haven't seen it.
You mean, or what
I mean, like, well, I mean, with CryptoPunks, I mean, there's so many copies of it with like the CryptoPunks flipped or like one slight color variation, but like that's just like, or even if it's like changed a little more than that, but it's still so similar, like just low effort projects that are like pump and dumpy. It's like, I want those to go away.
Okay. Fair. All right. What are you bullish on?
Like everything that I'm doing space.
You can't say anything about cyber, like besides cyber brokers, everything
not,
you're working on.
No, not. I didn't even mean specifically cyber brokers.
Okay.
I meant like I am working in this space because I'm bullish on it. Like, why did I become a crypto artist? Because I really believed in everything behind crypto. Why did I start building for the metaverse? Because I believe in what, where the metaverse is going to take us and that we'll all be living in it for most of our days in the future. Like I'm bearish in like this bullish in this ecosystem that I'm within. Like, I know that's super general, but.
No, I like it. All right. What do people misunderstand about you?
What do they misunderstand about me? Why don't you answer that? I'm your wife. What do people misunderstand about me?
I mean, I'm not like involved in your company or community on a day-to-day basis. So like, I don't know. I guess one thing, what do they misunderstand about you? I would say.
I'll tell you what my community thinks about me and then you can tell me what they misunderstand.
Well,
they think they think I'm nice. They think I'm smart. They think I'm just kidding.
okay. So I would say that what do they misunderstand? I would just say that people underestimate how much work you're putting into things. I don't think people know how much you're working or like how hard you're working.
Yeah. Like I work like 16-hour days. I actually didn't sleep last night. I pulled an all-nighter working.
But no, people always say that like, "Oh, I'm working 16-hour days." Like, no, like you are one of the few people I've encountered that are actually doing that.
Look at our output and know that we grew from literally three people for like 6 months to like the past 4 months, we grew to 10. like, look at our output. And I think that will like speak for itself of how much we've been grinding.
Okay. But you can't use mine. So you have to make up your own now.
Okay. What do people misunderstand about me? Well, sometimes people misunderstand my humor. Can I say that?
That's a good one.
Yeah. Like sometimes I have to catch myself in Discord or on Twitter replying because it doesn't come across well in message sometimes, especially if you don't personally know me. So yeah, I'd say my humor probably.
That's funny because yeah, to extrapolate on that, your humor is very unusual and you also like really like dark humor. So it's kind of like part of it's very weird. And
but
it's,
I can't like be super dark in my Discord, or maybe I can. You guys tell me if you've made it this far in the podcast, if you want me to get dark in the Discord.
You guys should say no. She gets pretty crazy.
No, the bad part, the reason why I couldn't is because people would screenshot and like put it totally out of context.
Or put it in context, you know?
Yeah, like, that's true.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. All right. What was your biggest failure and what did you learn from that experience?
In life? My biggest failure in life?
Anything.
Oh, it's a big question.
We can do one life and one business.
I don't know if it's necessarily a failure because I feel like it was kind of hustly, which I don't regret. It's my biggest failure. I feel like I have a lot of like smaller failures, but I'm trying to think of like a big one. I think my biggest failure was when I was younger, not putting more into like myself, if that makes sense. Like I worked a ton when I was younger, like literally had a job since I was before I was even a teenager, working like full time. And I was always like hustling, getting the next dollar, but I didn't really put a lot into myself of like, I never read books. I still don't read books. Like I don't know like a lot of history. I don't know a lot of science. Like I just don't know a lot of things. And so I feel like my biggest failure, which I think I can correct, is not investing enough in myself and my like absorbing and like educating myself on things.
I like that one. Okay. How about business?
Business. I'm just thinking of like horror stories from when I was younger. I'm trying to think of a more recent one. Honestly, I felt like, I don't know if it's the biggest failure. It's just more recent. I felt like a total failure for how long it took me to launch Cyber Brokers. That felt like a fail because it was just like cooking for so long and I was perfecting every single tiny little small thing. And I think that felt afterwards like a failure, like it could have been a lot faster.
So in terms of the learning from that, is your mentality now, let's just get it out the door, even if it's not perfect?
No, I still want things perfect, but let's not make whatever the phrase is perfect then, or completion, the enemy of perfect the enemy of completion, whatever it is. I don't know what it is. That is where I start using my 85% rule for things that aren't like, we're releasing a huge collection. It's like the 85% rule for everything else of like, let the team own and manage these other things that they can do, which by the way, my team does 100% better than me on many things. The 85% rule is just like a, I don't know how to explain it. It doesn't mean that I do things 100 and everyone else does 85. But if someone can do it as good as you're going to do it, generally you let them do it so you can focus on the bigger things. So I've been really fortunate to get a lot of help in ironing out all of the smaller details that I don't necessarily need to look at, like with a fine tooth comb.
All right. Last question. How do you define success?
The first thing that comes to my head is happiness, which I know you and I define success really differently. But yeah, happiness, I think is how I define success.
I love it. That's great. I was thinking it's going to be something pertaining to business, but that's awesome.
No, I mean, right. I tell you every day how lucky I feel and how happy I am with my life. So I already feel successful.
Love it. Awesome. Josie, thank you so much for coming on. We'll chat with you soon.
Thank you. Bye, guys.